Away. Hello, and welcome back to Spilling Labrador Tea Under Cedar Tree with Kate and Mads.
Hope you're having a great day today, and we're excited to go over some topics with you about the inspiration of our podcast, coming up with the names, historical context on the 60 Scoop, stories of our parents, and a traditional story.
Yeah, so today we're going to start off with how we came about having our name and the fun, experience of trying to figure out what we're going to name a podcast that we hadn't even recorded yet.
Oh my goodness, it was hilarious. We came up with, I think, I have it right here, 4 different names, and we got our friends to vote, and no one could agree.
No, like literally every time we were like, okay, this is the last one, and then we're going to have it. Like, then somebody else is like, oh, actually, can I do this one? And then 2 of them were tied again. Like,
again, it was Camex and Mox, Sealskin and Ribbon Skirts.
Strawberries and Cloudberries. And then we had Labrador Tea and Cedar Trees.
So we were close with the last one.
Right? Super close.
And then my older sister, we were like, okay, it's going to be Jasmine's time to vote. And went, yep, I hate all of these.
Literally.
And I was like, fine, then you come up with something.
And she did. And she was like, I don't know, it should be something that kind of like fits with both of you. It shouldn't be, you know, like a little catchphrase. Right. And then she was like, I don't know, maybe it's like spilling tea under cedar trees. And we're like, ooh, maybe.
I was like, you got us. Because she's like, you guys are spilling the tea of what it's like to be on territory that isn't ours and reclaiming culture. And I was like, this is why you're my sister.
Right. Keeping us in line.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was pretty interesting trying to come up with names, just because we were like, all right, what do we want this to represent? And then basically it was like, oh, it needs to be both of us. And we're like, and we want it to be cultural. So we're literally like, okay, like what's something from your nation that we can line up with something from my nation kind of thing. So I was like, all right, those 2 shoes.
Yeah. Camex and moccasins. That could work. That could work.
Right? And then it's like, all right, what's something you wear that I also have something I wear? And it's like ribbon skirts.
Seal skin.
Basically. Oh my God. It was ridiculous. And I mean, we wrote them all down and we still have it and all the tallies. And yeah, it was between Camex and moccasins and Labrador Tea and Cedar Trees were the 2 name options that originally we had.
All losers.
Right?
Yeah. No one was a winner.
Oh my God. But yeah. It was pretty fun. So shout out to Jasmine for getting our podcast name.
Yes. And the inspiration for the podcast was just us hanging out, talking on the couch about all these things that go on in the world. And then telling David about it. And then David just gassing us up to start a podcast.
So thank you, David.
Yep.
All right. So we're going to take a small break and we're gonna get back to the next topic. All right, so our main topic today that we're gonna discuss is the 60 Scoop. So we're gonna go over some of like the historical context, some facts around it, and then we're probably gonna go into a little bit about what's being done currently to help just restore some justice and having some closure for those who are affected by it. So I'm going to read a quote to start. So our objective is to continue until there is not a single Indian in Canada that has not been absorbed into the body politic. And there's no Indian question and no Indian department. And that is the whole object of the bill. That was Duncan Campbell Scott. He was the Deputy Superintendent General of Indian Affairs back in 1920. This was actually a quote that was about residential schools, but as we've learned through time, the 60 Scoop was another tactic that came about once residential schools started being seen under bad light and things like that. Yeah, so Patrick Johnson actually was a researcher for the Canadian Council on Social Development, and he was the one that first used the term 60 Scoop in his 1983 report on Indigenous children and the child welfare system. It was entitled Native Children and the Child Welfare System. In the report, he described the large-scale apprehension of Indigenous children in the 1960s from their homes, communities, and families of birth, often without their parents' or band's consent. Their subsequent adoption into predominantly non-Indigenous families across the United States and Canada, and that was information from the Canadian Encyclopedia from 2020. we've learned that the years that are considered to be 60s scoop is between 1951 and actually the 1980. So it's not just the 60s. It continued on for a couple decades.
Yeah, and just building off what Teacher Mads said, that in 1951, the Indian Act was amended to include the, quote, general law of applicability in Section 88, which meant that provincial or territorial child welfare legislation could now be applied to on reserve. Initially, these provinces and territories could intervene on reserve only in extreme emergencies. Under this new arrangement, the allocation of federal funds to allow the delivery of provincial and territorial support for on-reserve services. The result was a massive and permanent removal of Indigenous children from their homes and communities and placed in foster care and or adopted. According to the Rural Commission on Indigenous Peoples in 1996, over 11,000 Indigenous children were adopted between 1960 and 1990. A period that was coined, like Teacher Mads said, the 60 scoop. The Department of Indigenous Affairs indicates that a number of Indigenous children were adopted, were 11,133. However, more recent research suggests there's actually more to 20,000 First Nations, Inuit, and Métis children that were moved from their homes. And many children were also sent abroad as far as New Zealand.
Yeah, and a weird fact that I found just recently was that the department's statistics referred to Indian status children only, while status itself may or may not have been ever recorded by social workers. So it didn't necessarily include the numbers of children who were not considered status. And then I actually have an ad here that I had found while we were doing our research. That used to be like put in the papers during mm-hmm. this time to encourage non-Indigenous families to basically adopt these Indigenous children that were in the foster care systems. So it's by AIM, and this was mostly Métis children. So one of the ads was, it says, safe in your hands. Your hands could hold the future of a Métis child. Without parents, without a home, free from prejudice and full of love, these children of Indian heritage face an uncertain future. If you have such a home and would like to adopt as your own a Métis boy or girl, then you could become part of AIM. It was like, there was so many of them that we found, and it was awful. And just like, I mean, you see like ads for like pets and things like that and like renting homes, but I would have never thought that you would see basically them trying to sell off children in the newspaper. It's disgusting.
It's so sad. And just maybe these children, like, we don't know them, right? Like, hopefully they did eventually find their families and find their culture. But just imagining that you're just a kid in a newspaper.
And, like, imagine these people nowadays, like, coming across these things. Like, how traumatizing that would be to be, like, my parents found me in a newspaper. Mm-hmm. And that is how I end up where I am. Mm-hmm. Like, that would be, oh, my God. That's awful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And while we're doing research too, I looked up what was it like towards Inuit, and I thought it was really interesting that the 60s scoop was a different approach in the North almost. We are people who traditionally have our babies at home, right? And with the influx of industrialism, colonialism, healthcare professionals were really advising Inuit women to go to the South to have their babies, and finding more and more excuses for Inuit women to go to the South to have their babies. And that was a way that the government would apprehend our kids, was through going down South to have our kids and then returning home often without them.
That's really sad. Mm-hmm. That's heartbreaking. Yeah, I had a conversation with my mom just because I kind of wanted to get her take on things, just because when we were researching information, we couldn't find numbers about the Mi'kmaq people or anything like that. So I thought I'd just ask her some questions just to see if she knew any information. And I actually remembered, and I have permission for her to share information, that my mom actually never knew what the 60s scoop was. She was born in 75, and she was adopted and things like that. I had mentioned that when we did our trailer. So she never knew what the 60s scoop was. So actually, when I was in high school in grade 12, we were learning about a bunch of different Indigenous history throughout Canada and things like that. And that's when I learned about the 60s scoop. And I actually was talking to my teacher at the time, and I was like, oh, my mom's Indigenous, and she was adopted and 75. And my teacher's like, oh, technically she would have been also a part of the 60 Scoop. And I was like, oh, that's crazy. Mm-hmm. And I told my mom, and she had no idea that that was even a thing. But when we talked about it more recently, she's like, that makes sense now, because my grandmother had told a story, like my Nana, so my mom's adopted mom, mm-hmm. told a story about how when they had adopted my mom, that another like a friend of theirs had were the ones that encouraged them to adopt out of this one home, like a native child, as mm-hmm. they had put it. Because like they had adopted a little girl and things like that, and they're like, oh, they're very nice and yada yada. And then so but the thing was, is the community actually took back the daughter of the friend that they had adopted. And so my grandparents actually had my mother's original birth certificate killed off. That way my mom couldn't be located, basically, because they lived very close to where my biological grandmother had lived. So they were worried that if my grandma decided to change her mind, that they would take that. I mean, she would take my mom back. So they killed her off, and she didn't really get to know about her family until she was in her early 20s, kind of thing. So, yeah, it's amazing what happened back then. And, I mean, in some sense, it continues to happen now.
For sure. That's just wild, like, having a birth certificate, then deciding to destroy it.
Yeah. And in some sense, that destroyed information that we would have had to be able to locate family, because we don't have a lot of information on my grandfather, and mm-hmm. that would have been a very good source to get it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so what else, what other information did we end up finding?
We found some stuff about reuniting families yes. as well.
Yeah, so there was a website created that children from and families from the 60 Scoop era could add their information in, and they could get help in locating their family or lost children and things like that. So that was very interesting to learn about.
Yeah, and how the way that they built it, it's in the way of a map.
Yeah.
So it's an interactive map. You can put in your information, you can find your family, or your family can find you.
Mm-hmm.
Which, so it was built by survivors for survivors.
Yeah, which is like amazing, because I mean, they're the ones that are interested, because I mean, most of this is new information to a lot of people. So mm-hmm. obviously the government hasn't fully gotten involved. But there was a class action suit against the federal government, and each survivor was entitled to $25,000, but no more than $50,000. And yeah, so other than that, there's not really much else. I believe there's potentially getting looked into to having like mental health and support and like therapy support. As far as I know, I've heard a little bit about that, but nothing that we have concrete information for, unless you do.
Not quite yet. I know I was reading a little bit about the settlements because my dad, too, could qualify for it. And they're building a lot of the framework out of the what happened with residential school survivors. And since this is still quite nuanced, that there's going to be a different approach.
Yeah.
And different ways to connect with people, and probably also like different eligibility mm-hmm. as well. But we hope sometime soon. And there's lots of support groups there online for survivors of the 60 Scoop. And of course, if anybody who is listening that wants to be pointed in the direction of a support group, we're more than happy to provide some resources.
Yeah, and we're also like very, very open if people want to reach out, if they have information for us that we think that they think would be useful for us to pass on to people as well. We're still learning, so we're very much open to having resources provided if for some reason we were never able to find them. Like, we're here to learn and also to try to provide information for others as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So now I'm going to tell a story about my dad. Last weekend, my dad and I were talking, and I asked him a question I've asked him before. I asked him, what's his favorite thing about being Inuk? And my dad goes, wow, that's such a great question. I've never thought about that before. And I was like, yeah, Dad, like, what is it? I'd love to hear it. And of course, like, this is with his permission as well to share this. His favorite thing about being Inuk is the ability to adapt and survive in any situation he gets put into. And I thought that was just like really beautiful. And I'm so happy he shared that with me because it's just so true. Not to brag, but Inuit are some of the most adaptable people there are. We can survive in negative 50 and apparently plus 40, I've learned when I was living overseas. But my dad was right. And he thinks that that is such a gift that Inuit have, is the ability to adapt, blend in, and survive anywhere where they are.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My dad.
Oh, he's a great guy. It's always fun hearing his stories.
Yeah, he has lots of stories, and I'm excited to share more of his thoughts and feelings on things throughout the podcast.
Yeah, I think he'll be a great insight, and he doesn't hold back on his criticisms.
No, he doesn't. He's a very blunt man, so that's good. It's good times talking to Wayne.
I'm going to talk about my mom's adoption a little bit more, just because I think that's an important aspect. And I feel like we don't hear the stories of what it actually means to reconnect with your family after you've been adopted, mm-hmm. and things like that. So again, I have permission from my mom to share this, her story and some information and things. I called her the other weekend, and I was like, hey, can I ask you some questions? And she's like, go for it. So she turned around and I was like, so like, what did you do in order to find grandma? And she's like, well, I actually had an opportunity to get reconnected back when I was 16, but she was straight up like, I wasn't ready. And mm-hmm. I was like, okay, that makes sense. That makes sense. And so she's like, when we moved back east and we lived in Quebec for a while, she's like, I was ready. So I decided to start looking, and she's like, I was 22. I had three kids with a fourth on the way. She's like, it was time for me to try to reconnect. So she had to contact the adoption agency, I believe is what she had said. And she had to basically ask if she could get in contact. And the lady was like, all right, I can help you. We can do this together. And she was like, let me try to get in contact and I'll let you know what the answer is. And my grandma said yes. So in order, in the beginning, they have to exchange like letters and photos and things like that. So like my mom's like, I still have all the letters and I still have the photos and things like that. And it was very, very like nice. And she was like, I was nervous at first, but after a while it was okay. So you had to do that for a couple weeks, and then you were able to do your first contact kind of thing. So in 98, my mom went to go meet her biological mother for the first time.
Wow.
And my youngest sister was only a couple months old, I think, at the time. And she took the train from Quebec to, it's in Nova Scotia, but I think it was Dartmouth, I think it's the city. I cannot remember, but yeah, I think it was Dartmouth. And she met my grandma for the first time, and I was like, okay, like what's the first thing you remember? And she was like, I just remember that she gave the biggest hug for like such a small person. Mm. My grandma was, she was like 4'10", right? And she was just this tiny little thing. I don't remember ever meeting her, but like my mom was always like, no, like she was small. And I was like, okay, all right, that makes sense. I was like, you're not that big either. But yeah, she was like the biggest hug, and she was just this tiny little lady. And she was very loving and giving, and she was a very strong woman, because I had two aunties that had passed away from cystic fibrosis. She had my grandma had lost both of her parents by the time she was 10. She had a bunch of family, siblings and aunts and uncles, a bunch of people had passed away all throughout her life. And, my mom was like, she was just surrounded by death, all the time, but she was just so loving, and she would do anything she could for you if she possibly could. And she was like, she always really enjoyed getting phone calls and things like that. So, I also distinctly remember stealing the phone from my mom when grandma would call, because that was the only way I had contact. I don't fully remember the conversations, but I do remember just really enjoying getting to talk to her.
Mm-hmm.
And and I found out there's one photo of me with my grandma that my mom still has. So I was really happy about that, because I actually don't think I had never really seen that photo before until I had asked if I had ever met her, because I didn't remember. And my mom's like, oh, yeah, no, you definitely did. She's like, there's a photo of you with her. And I was like, okay. And then, I was like, well, that makes sense then. But it was really great. And I'm happy that she actually got to meet her mom and things like that, because my grandma passed away back in 2015, I believe it was. And so my mom only got to meet her that one time, and then she never got to see her again, kind of thing. But she always has those phone calls and the letters and photos and things like that. So, yeah, it was an interesting journey for my mom to go on. Because she does admit that she denied being Native until she was about 17 years old. She denied that that's what she was, and she always felt like she didn't fit in with her family because she was dark-skinned. Mm. And my adoptive grandparents and aunt, uncles are obviously white, and so she just felt like she didn't fit in. But I think she found some connection when she finally got to meet her family and saw that she looked like everybody else. And, yeah. That was my mom.
Wow. That takes so much courage to be like, okay, I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
I'm going to go and meet a whole bunch of strangers.
And she has said she had a really good time.
I bet.
She was like, it was fun being around my mom. She's like, I got to meet my one aunt, and my one aunt was always there and wanted to make sure she was always there when I was there. So, and then I had one of my uncles came and lived with us for a while. So I did get to meet some of my family from back east, and hopefully one day I'll be able to go back and meet more. It's an ongoing journey for sure.
For sure. And just always having to put yourself out there and hope to be accepted and loved. And it's always so nice when that is met.
Mm-hmm.
I've had the pleasure of going back and meeting some of my dad's siblings, and it's definitely nerve-wracking. You're like, oh gosh, do I look like these people? Are they going to, like me? Are they going to think I'm funny? And all those types of feelings that you get when you're meeting a whole bunch of new people. And it's always comforting that those are your family, and either way, they're going to love and accept you.
Yeah, for sure. And I had also asked my mom the same question you asked your dad about, what's your favorite part? And what was it again? I was like, what's one cultural aspect that you enjoy? And my mom's like, I don't actually know anything. And I was like, oh, have you not been listening this whole time?
Do you listen when I talk to you?
Right? Yeah. And I was like, I sent you the language apps. That's something that I'm going to be dipping my toes into, is trying to teach my mom everything that I've been able to learn. I thought I had already done that, but I'm not having a very good job, supposedly. It's something I'm actually excited and looking forward to do, because it'll be nice to have somebody else learning with me and not just being me on my own.
Yeah, for sure. My sister and I have talked about taking Inuktitut classes together, and we've taken one together so far. And it was on Zoom, obviously, because of COVID. And my sister and I just looked at each other in the Zoom, and we're like, how do you make those noises?
I don't have that muscle.
Yeah. And I was like, is that in the throat? Is that on the side of my mouth? What? Oh my goodness. Can you speak slower? And we both just laughed. We're like, oh my goodness, this is going to take forever for us to learn.
I laugh when I'm uncomfortable.
Yeah. I laugh when I'm nervous. It's always fun though, that it's not a linear path though too. And you're going to make mistakes and hopefully learn from them and always have another person to pick yourself back up with.
Yeah. And that's the biggest, thing that we've been able to do together for the most part is like we've both been affected by the 60 scoop having a parent adopted. And we're both currently trying to learn culture basically on our own at this point because we both live over here and all of our family is back east. Mm-hmm. And so we're finding online resources, right, to be able to learn everything and also like teaching our families. Yeah. As well, along the way.
For sure. And I think it's been, of course, COVID's been very, very hard on a lot of folks, but it's also given us an opportunity for a lot of those resources to come out online and to be accessible to us instead of like a lot of things have to happen in person. But now we're realizing we're in a digital age and you can log into a Zoom class or you can do a phone call.
Yeah.
Instead of always having to travel to learn culture.
Yeah. Positive from a pandemic?
Positive from a pandemic. So to close this off, I would like to share one of my favorite stories from my culture. And it's the story of Neluliak, or Sedna. The story is, long time ago, there was the most beautiful girl in a village, and her name is Neluliak. Neluliak liked to spend time on the land. She had many suitors. Many men, hunters, would come from all over to ask for Neluliak's hand in marriage. And she would refuse them all. And her dad was getting older and really wanted her to get married so that then her husband could provide for her and her dad. But she would rather be on the land by herself and with her dog team. And then one day when she was alone at the camp while her father was out hunting, this really, really handsome man came to ask for her hand in marriage. And she said yes right away. She thought about after of waiting for her dad's permission, but she couldn't wait because she thought she loved him so much. And the man made her promises of lots of meats and furs. So Neluliak went with him and she moved to an island where this man lived and she was all by herself. But he did provide lots of meats and furs at first. And while he was gone, she would just be by herself. And she got very afraid of the man because he started being very mean to her. And she cried and cried for her dad. And on this island, it was surrounded by the ocean. And so she cried all the time that her tears and her cries carried over the sea and her father could hear her. And he would just like yell, "Where's Neluliak? Neluliak, where are you?" And he got into his kayak and he kayaked out to sea. And he found this island and heard her cries. And he tried to rescue her. But while he was trying to rescue her, the handsome man came back and tried to pull her away from her dad. And it was a violent fight. And then the very handsome man actually started to wave his arms. And then he started to turn into a bird. And so then he would flap his wings over the sea, creating waves to knock over Neluliak's dad's kayak. And he would peck and claw and try to pull her out of it. And Neluliak's dad tried to paddle fast away from the bird man. But he kept trying and trying and he couldn't get anywhere. And the bird man kept trying to pull Neluliak out of the kayak. And so in order to save his daughter, he tossed her overboard. Neluliak grabbed onto the side of the kayak. But then her father went for his knife. And then he cut off her fingers. And as she floated down to the bottom of the sea, her hands started to transform. And then she became the mother of the sea. And so before hunters go out for a hunt, they would have to sing songs and give offerings to Neluliak to have a bountiful feast and harvest for the year. And then she became the mother of the sea. And so before hunters go out for a hunt, they would have to sing songs and give offerings to Nunuliak to have a bountiful feast and harvest for the year.
Well, Alio, for joining us today, and we hope that we can see you next time. Please follow us on Instagram at @spillinglabtea_cedartrees.
And also, you can listen to us on all major streaming apps, Spotify, Apple Podcast, Pocket Podcasts, under Spilling Labrador Tea, under Cedar Trees.
Namolta, see you later.
See you later.
What did you put in this? This is really good.
It is really nice tea, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. What is it again?
Sarah Jessa.
Ooh. Ooh.
It's for a good cause.
It is for a good cause.